Set your course for the Huff
Takes Podcast.
Welcome to Huff Takes. I'm Eric Geller.
I'm Grace Seegers.
And I'm Haley Bird-Wilt.
And we're coming to you in person from near a movie theater in Northwest DC because we just saw The Mandalorian and Grogu. It's the first new Star Wars movie in 7 years, so obviously we have to do an episode about it. But it's not like any other Star Wars movie that I can think of. And actually, I would like to go to you, Haley, first.
Oh, me?
To get your overall top line. You just saw the movie. The end credits rolled 10 minutes ago, roughly.
Yeah.
What did you think?
Peak art.
Peak art. Okay.
No,
Say more.
I'm joking. So I was screening this. I told my kids, I'm going to see if it's too scary for you. And it is. Do not take your children if they're under 7 or 8, really.
So if your child is 6, tell them that this podcast told them they cannot see this movie.
There's lots and lots of monsters. It's very scary. That's the parents' reaction. I felt that it was the most AI-generated Star Wars yet. Mm. And maybe they didn't use any AI, and maybe I'm just a suspicious person in this day and age, but the background... And the images and the visuals all felt soulless to me in a lot of the scenes. There were a few scenes that seemed to be happening in a real reality where there's a forest, and those were the most beyond my eyes, and I was okay with those. The other reason I was okay with those is because halfway through, there's a little bit of Christian imagery going on.
Oh, okay.
The whole time I'm like, I hate this. And then Mando gets a wound in his side that looks a lot like the wound in Christ's side. And then he is put into a tomb for multiple days.
Oh, right.
And then he rises again.
Mando's Jesus.
And the reason I'm okay making this comparison is he gets all these wounds in this terrible situation because he is being selfless and helping someone in pursuit of good and truth instead of bowing down to pressure from the governing authorities and the Jabba the Hutts and all them. If that was intentional, I like it.
I think it was.
It looks so much like medieval renderings of the
John Favreau is noted for his deep, studious nature and attention to Christian iconography.
I think there's some Catholicism going on. The other reason I think that is because he gets the wound from a dragon serpent, is what they call it, which also has a lot of resonance within the Bible, like the dragon and the serpent. Yeah, and also the Hutts, the bad guy's lair looks like hell. Like they're in the depth of the earth, and it is the film is the harrowing of hell, but it's really the harrowing of the Hutts.
So it's Dante's Inferno.
Yeah, but with the Mandalorian.
But with the Mandalorian. That's our great recommendation, folks. If you love Dante's Inferno, you're going to love the Mandalorian and Grogu.
They should have leaned into that far more, and they should have not used the volume.
Mm-hmm,
I fear most of the film was made in the volume, and it made it look bad. I'm sorry. But I'm anti-volume.
I agree. I think that there were some funny moments for sure, but it didn't have heart. It didn't have soul. The only exception I would say is that sequence where Grogu is sort of taking care of Mando. And that's really the only time that there are two characters relating to, interacting with each other as opposed to the surroundings or a fight scene, right? It's two people who care about each other taking care of each other. And I don't think it's a coincidence that is the only part that we enjoyed. Is that your feeling as well, Grace?
I liked three things.
Okay.
That I'm wholeheartedly, these were good things. Number one, Ludwig Göransson's score.
Okay, yes. We got to say the
that
music.
Was good.
Music was great. And I think he's a wonderful composer. He's composed a lot of good stuff. He's composed every Ryan Coogler movie. Black Panther and Sinners. He did the Oppenheimer soundtrack. He's a great composer. So he did some great stuff there. Number two, sound mixing. Excellent. So for those who don't know, sound editing is when you get the kind of noise, and sound mixing is making it so that when he punches someone, it makes a punchy sound. Excellent sound mixing. I actually think they probably put more effort into the sound mixing because it was so CGI-ified that it needed to sound
the tactile
real.
Element.
Yeah, and so I actually genuinely think they put a lot of effort into that. And the punches felt like punches, so...
And there were a lot of punches.
There were, you might even say that the whole movie was just a sequence of punches. Yeah. But those were my two major things. The third thing I liked was that there was a like Babu freak alien. I don't remember what they're called.
Yes, the Enzelans.
And there was a point where Grogu makes a shot, and the Enzelan goes, "Nice shot, baby."
That's what does it for you in a Star Wars movie.
Nice shot, baby.
But he's like, "Nice shot, baby."
It's interesting because I actually found the Enzelans a little cloying. I kind of feel like it was
like
too much. The thing I don't like is when they're speaking basic or English, but they're like not supposed to be really. It's like kind of supposed to be, you're supposed to know what they're saying, but they're not just speaking clear, simple English. It's like half 1 foot in the door of cuteness and then half 1 foot in the door of clarity. And it just felt too cute.
I want to be clear though. When I say I liked, that's it.
Yeah.
I liked that one line.
Okay, I see what you're saying.
I'm not saying I liked the Enzelans. I'm not saying I liked anything else. I liked that one line nice shot, baby.
Okay.
I thought, okay, here's a hot take. Grogu was too baby in this movie. I thought we had matured a little bit in the show.
Yeah.
He was acting far too baby.
So this isn't an original critique. I think I saw it from former Hoth Take participant Bill Kookman,
yep.
Where he actually talked about how the relationship between Mando and Grogu is kind of super, like, is it buddy cop? Is it parent-child? Is it even
pet? Very parent-child
but,
in this
But,
one.
Like, even pet, because he's like, heal and stay.
Yes.
And it's like, what's happening here? What are we supposed to feel here? I don't even know. I agree with you that he was very, very baby. But it was just like they turned, to paraphrase a drill tweet, they turned the dial on cuteness all the way up and then looked back at the audience. Like, that's what they were doing there.
I think that's a great way of framing it as, like, audience feedback because they're trying to tell a story with these characters. It's a father and son story. But in the real world, this is the cutest creature that we've ever seen in Star Wars. And so they're really trying to lean into that with, like, gag lines, like, heel. That's, like, if these people were real, having this relationship in the real world, he wouldn't treat him like a pet, right? Like, he's doing that for the third wall, right? Yeah. The fourth wall, right? That's for us. And anytime you try to balance for us versus for the character, it feels like a half measure in this sense where you can't decide who you want them to be.
So Haley got to do her Christianity comparison. Now it's my turn to be really on brand and make an anime comparison. So in anime, a lot of times when anime is really successful, they stop doing like TV seasons and they'll make a movie. That's like, if it's based on manga, they will adapt a arc from the manga into a movie instead of a season of the show. And I have an anime that if you ever meet me in real life, we can talk about how much it sucks and how the whole world is wrong. And I hate
One Piece. I was trying to get you in trouble with the One Piece stance.
No, it's Demon Slayer, which is the most popular anime in the world, so I will be in trouble.
Okay.
It sucks, though.
Why does it suck?
No, well,
I don't know anything about it. You have to give us a little bit.
Get yourself in more trouble.
You literally can't. Okay. The thing about it is that it's visually boring and the characters suck and the plot is boring.
Other than that, it's great.
But everyone was like, oh, you have to watch it because... Actually, this is another good comparison, so I will make it. So everyone was like, oh, you have to watch it because it's so high def and the animation is so clean. And it's like being super ultra 4K high definition does not mean the animation is interesting, which is similar actually to this, where it's like... Having all of these CGI creatures does not mean that it's interesting. It doesn't mean that the fights are good. Like, you can't just throw a live-action DeGeric game and be like, isn't this fun? So anyway, Demon Slayer. They had a movie come out in fall that I saw because I hate myself. this movie was 2 hours and 35 minutes long.
You really hate-watched it?
I really did.
Did you pay?
Yeah.
Oh, she paid. She paid with money and she paid with her time and with her soul.
And it was 2 hours and 35 minutes. And 5 minutes before the end of the movie, I realize the arc is not wrapping up.
Mm.
And I look over to my friend and she says, oh, this is the first in a trilogy.
What?
And I was so upset. But I bring this up because I mean, I hate Demon Slayer, but the Infinity Castle arc should have been a season. It should not have been a movie, much less three movies. The only reason it was made into a movie is because it makes a ton of money. Like, it was the number one movie in the U.S. for a month.
And I've never heard of it.
Yeah.
There's a whole, that's what, my point being, there is a whole group of people, subculture, who will make it the number one movie in the U.S. and I didn't even know about it.
Exactly. So my point is, like, it only exists because it makes money. And I felt like this movie, Mandalorian and Grogu, could have easily been a season of TV.
It could have been four or five episodes. I mean,
exactly.
The lines between the segments, who he's fighting, where he's going,
so clear.
Are obvious episode marks. It almost makes me wonder, we might have even discussed when this was announced, whether they had originally just planned to do it as a series and written the scripts and then changed it when they realized they didn't have any other movies coming out. I remember us conspiracy theorizing about whether that was the plan. And it would make sense if they used those scripts and just pushed them together. You would get this movie.
And it was just like, this shouldn't have been a movie. And that's my long-winded anime comparison. Just, this shouldn't have been a movie.
The way Rada the Hutt looks is horrible. When he's fighting
he's
other
so
people,
beefy.
I hate it. He like rolls on the other huts at one point. I just wanted to puke. Like, this is not fun to watch.
I have to say,
this is nauseating. Like, why would you put this on the big screen?
I have to, in the vein of Grace saying that she liked "Nice Shot, Baby," I did like when Din Djarin said, "Do you have a photo of him?" And they were like, "Unfortunately, all we have is a 2008 Clone Wars animated series screen grab of Stinky the Hutt from when he first met Ahsoka." I thought that was nice touch.
I laughed out loud.
Give us something for the diehard fans. I will say that it is weird to look at him, but I actually think what they're trying to do with his character is interesting.
It was interesting.
A Hutt who doesn't want to do Hutt stuff and like is trying to be, especially a Hutt who's in the shadow of Jabba the Hutt.
Yeah.
And I thought that was interesting, but I think Haley, you're right, like watching him move,
it's horrible.
Because we're so used to just seeing a sedentary Hutt, it feels slippery in this weird way.
It's
where
your
brain rejects it.
There was like a weird sexual undertone to the, like when they first visit the huts, there's like the scene where the huts are like writhing around in there. I don't like that at all.
Why were they writhing?
I don't want to see huts writhing in a small chamber. I'm sorry, but that's against the law.
And you can quote Haley on that.
And you can quote her on that.
Here's one thing I liked. We got to see Dave Filoni, and he looked like he was having fun.
I have to say, you know, I've been pretty critical of Star Wars, many friends, but giving us, on the big screen, Dave Filoni wearing a cowboy
hat,
refusing to take off the cowboy hat, he won't do it. Thank you, Lucasfilm. I needed that.
You know what was interesting was he was actually cameo twice, because he was also a pilot.
Yep.
So that made me wonder, like, was it that he did need to have the cowboy hat on for one scene? Like, they couldn't just do the cameo of him as a pilot. It's like,
right.
We need to know he's a
In case you weren't sure who it is. Although, I thought it was interesting, the people next to us, when Dave Filoni came on screen for that second time, they laughed in recognition, and I think they did the first time, too. So, he may be, at this point, more recognizable than just us people who've been watching the Clone Wars for 20 years at this point. So, you know, maybe he's starting to break through to the normies.
It's like a Stan Lee cameo.
Maybe people are recognizing him. Next time, I want his hat to be bigger.
Yes, it has to get bigger every
time. Speaking of Dave Filoni, big hats, and Easter eggs, Embo, the return of Embo in live action, did we need that? Did it need to be Embo the Bounty Hunter? Was that cool?
So the thing about this, for me, is part of my larger critique, that some of the fight choreography was really cool, and the film editing for the fight choreography wasn't bad, but the issue was that he was never fighting against anyone real, and that included Embo. So even at the end, when they're having what should be a really interesting fight, like, there are a couple of moves that were very interesting, but it was just boring to watch because one of them wasn't real and was so clearly not real. Like, that was part of the issue, was even when they're in this arena and fighting all these monsters, like, it's so clearly not real. So whatever, like, visual interestingness they throw in there with having him do fun kicks and shots and whatever, it's completely undercut by the fact that you can tell he's not fighting anything real, to repeat myself a million times.
You're right, though.
So, like, if Embo had been a human bounty hunter, it would have been so much better.
What
I
is
think.
He? Is he a robot? I couldn't
He's
tell.
A Cuso, which I thought was interesting, because they had a moment where Mando goes, I know Cuso are smart
yeah,
enough to get their money.
Yeah, he was being racist against Cuso.
Yeah,
oh,
like,
my God.
So gratuitous. You know, it's interesting. When we were when we did our Andor reviews for season one, one of the things we talked about, and the internet talked about this too, was not enough aliens. Mm-hmm. It's a weirdly human-centric show. And then you watch this and you come to appreciate that humans can look at each other,
yeah.
have eye movement reactions,
yes.
have lip sneers, and all kinds of things that tell you what the character's thinking. And even with our core main character, main human character, we got essentially none of that.
Mm. Eric, I literally thought about this very point in somewhere in the movie where I was thinking...
Somewhere in that
2 hour and 12 minute or whatever movie. I was thinking about how we had talked about how Andor was mostly human, and I was having pretty much the opposite reaction here. I was like, there are too many aliens.
Yeah.
Mm-hmm.
And the best live-action fighty sequence happened in the very beginning when he's doing this knockdown, drag-out, shootout with stormtroopers. Because,
yeah.
yes, they're all wearing helmets, but at least they're, like, played
That's
by
an
human
actor.
Extras.
Yeah.
You know?
Yeah, the biggest thing, like, I would be okay with this film existing as a beautifully animated film. I think it should
yeah.
have just been animation at this point, because everything is a cartoon. The background is a cartoon. Most of the visuals are, like, not really things that exist. And Eric and I were just talking about before we started how Eric saw The Force Awakens like 19 times in theaters.
Exactly, 19
which is
times.
A fun,
not an exaggeration.
It's a fun film to watch because it looks good. This one does not look good. It felt like, here's a slop film for you slop people who like to watch slop. And it's like, come on,
eat the slop.
I don't like the slop. I want it to look good. I want it to feel like the sets that they are walking through are real sets and not like a computer screen generated by a robot. And it did feel like it was generated by a robot.
I will say, two exceptions to that were the forest when Grogu's taking care of Mando and the salt planet. I
yeah.
actually liked the city, the Hong Kong kind of city vibe.
I liked the vibe, but it felt like it was like an endless loop of like it had been generated. If you get
yeah.
past like 6
think,
feet behind them,
yes.
like it's just generated. Like
I
it's not.
The same thing.
I think it probably was, but at least the up close elements, the large
yeah.
crowds and the street vendors, you
yeah.
know, that was cool.
Once again, a thing I noticed on that planet. I loved the vibe. I loved that they had subways and that was grungy. But I actually noticed there's a part where Mando is walking through a crowd and there's people walking past him. And it made me think, like, I wonder if they've heard the feedback that there aren't enough real people.
Yeah.
And they were like, let's just throw 50 extras
yeah.
in this one seat.
We have a movie budget, so we can hire people to just walk next to him.
It should have been more extras, though.
It should have been more.
Because even the film that everyone hates, The Rise of Skywalker, do you remember the scene where they're having, like, the festival on that festival
sure.
planet? There's, like, 100 million extras. You should remember this. Sorry, there's sirens. They're coming for me.
Oh, no. No, they're coming for Grace. They're coming for Grace. It's the anime police. It's the anime police. I agree. I think even in a bad movie, which The Rise of Skywalker was, there are good parts, and a lot of that has to do with the feeling of
it's
real.
If it's real.
Yeah.
And it felt like there should have been... If it's a place that looks like Hong Kong or, like, a very, like, populated city, all the characters looked, like, familiar to me after a certain scene. Like, I had
yeah.
seen them multiple times. Like,
yeah.
they only had a certain number of extras that they were working with. And they would only show you, like, one segment of the arena because that's where they had their 50 people.
Right?
yeah.
I had that same thought.
Like, let's do more. Let's put more people into the film. This is Disney. This is a very large corporation.
I was also comparing it to Attack of the Clones. Weirdly, there were two parts that I compared to Attack of the Clones where I was like, somehow the 2002 movie with bad CGI comes out looking better. And one of them was, like, Coruscant had a very similar vibe, but, you know, it's gritty, it's grungy when they go into the Death Sticks bar, but they're just so many more people and so many more people in real costumes.
Yeah.
And also the arena scene, again, it's mostly CGI monsters, but there's just so much more, there's so many more stakes to it. And if I could continue for just a little bit longer, one thing I really don't like is how most of the time it's not Pedro Pascal in the suit, Most of the time, it's two body doubles whose names I shamefully do not remember in this moment, doing a great job with physicality. But like, you can tell he's voice acting through most of it, and it just made me think of another really great movie, V for Vendetta, where the main character wears a mask the entire time. And Hugo Weaving plays V, and he's a phenomenal actor. And something that's so cool about that movie is, like, he'll tilt his head, and this mask that's the same this whole time has a different expression on it. Like, just by the physicality of the way he moves, even though the mask doesn't change and he's wearing it literally the whole time, like, you can tell there's an actor underneath it giving it expression. And there was just... there's none of that here.
Yeah, I mean, C-3PO, another great example. The reason, yeah. The only reason that character worked is because even though his eyes don't even move, he can twitch his head, and somehow there's something evocative about his body movements that you believe that not only is there actually a person in there, but also that it feels like the character feels like a person too. And that doesn't work if the person who got the job to play the character isn't the one in the suit most of the time.
Yeah.
There's some nods and some head tilts and stuff where they're clearly trying to do as much as they can with a helmeted character, but you're right, it doesn't feel the same when it's the two of them. What did we think about the Djarik fight sequence? Jon Favreau is well known for idolizing the holographic chess scene from the first movie, and when the warlord guy is like, oh, I'm going to make him fight all these monsters, it's going to be a Djarik match. And I was like, oh, that's like obviously just an expression for whenever somebody's fighting a bunch of monsters. And then they pull back the camera, and the arena stage is designed like a Djarik board. Felt a little cheesy to me. They even have a moment where one of the creatures grabs the other creature and throws it, which is the exact same move from the A New Hope chess match, mm-hmm. where R2 did that and Chewbacca got mad. It felt a little too Easter eggy to me, a little like, here's something for the fans, except it was like ostensibly like the core of what was happening in the story in that moment. It wasn't something in the background.
Yeah.
To me, that was also just an example of a fight that just dragged on too long.
Yeah.
And if you think about the whole movie, is it anything other than four or five fights, just back to back?
It's like, more than that. Yeah. It's like 20 fights back to back.
Yeah, and there's like barely a plot to hang it on. It's like fight, and then another fight, and then another fight. And again, like you were saying, it feels very much like a clean end of the episode, and then it starts a new fight.
Yeah.
But I mean, I, similar to Haley, had the feeling that Rada the Hutt was too beefy. He was
too swole.
Too swole. Why'd he have arms like that?
He was too
really
wet. What? I'm so sorry, but he needs some paper towels.
No wet huts for you is what you're saying.
No wet huts. I believe that huts, even though it's not their home planet, they should be on Tatooine where they're nice and dry.
Oh, wow.
They should be dusty.
Problematic. Very,
go back to Tatooine.
Go back to Tatooine.
Get dry. Towel off.
We hate the way you look.
But he, like, his muscles, he had an 8-pack, which is deeply consuming.
I don't like how he looked.
But, like, there were points where I thought this could have been an interesting idea if it were well executed. So, like, the idea of a Hutt not wanting to be a Hutt. And even the idea of, like, a Hutt fighting in an arena, I thought was interesting, the way they, like, used his body with him rolling and smashing. And even though I didn't like it visually, I thought, that's interesting.
Yeah.
But you couldn't even really appreciate the interestingness of it because he was just fighting against other, like, CGI
computer-generated objects.
I thought, you know, you're talking about, like, there's no story in this movie. And it's a shame because Mando, being a quote-unquote independent contractor for the New Republic and not wanting to admit that he's essentially just a member of the New Republic at this point, has some interesting, like, you could do something interesting with that. Him grappling with, do I stay independent or do I join the government? But they don't play with that at all. There's brief mentions of the New Republic has an alliance with the Hutts, and then at the end they discover they've been lying to them, and it's mostly just fed to us by Sigourney Weaver's character, and that's like what I was hoping for a little more of, is that lore, right? Where are we in the galaxy at this point? What's happening in the galaxy? Jon Favreau did not want to tell that story.
There's something to hard pivot. There was a really great couple of food scenes.
Yes.
I want Haley to talk about the food scenes.
I have hot take. Okay. somehow in this film there's lots of food and none of it is appetizing.
Even the sandwich.
The sandwich made me want to vomit.
Really?
It's like this like computer generated piece of meat and it's like it's perfectly rectangular. It does not even, it's not sizzling. There's
but
no.
Martin Scorsese made it for
yes,
you.
Yes, I appreciate that part, but I did not like the way it looked and I didn't like the stuff he put on the sandwich. It had no character to it.
What if I told you?
Because I think the food wasn't real either.
What if I told you that that was practically made?
Are you serious?
I will send you a video of Jon Favreau talking to his chef friend who he consulted with to do that scene, and it's him making it and cutting it and putting the cheese whiz on it. It is all practical.
I hate the way it looked. Do it better, Jon Favreau.
The only part I liked about the sandwich was when he wrapped it in foil.
Yeah.
And it felt very greasy spoon to me.
It felt human. He cares for the person who's going to eat that sandwich.
And the fact that it was bizarrely voiced by Martin Scorsese.
I thought he did.
I liked him.
I deliver over here. Sometimes they pick up from me. It was very. That also felt very real. That way of speaking, because again, he's one of the few characters with any real personality.
Yeah.
As much as I think almost all the dialogue in that movie was bad.
Yeah.
And I'm a Star Wars fan, so I'm used to bad dialogue.
Right.
But even by that standard, that opening scene with the warlord who's like, I will protect you
awful,
all.
Awful.
Truly one of the worst ways to open any movie I've ever seen. And it didn't really get that much better from there. There wasn't, again, we're sort of spoiled by Andor, but even by the standards of other Star Wars movies, it was so thoroughly unimaginative and unsophisticated.
Also, why were they fighting?
I have a theory. Okay, I have a theory about the dialogue. I just went with my children to see the Mario movie, and they paid really, well for these very fancy actors to be the characters, and then they had them say, three words, because it apparently costs a lot of money to hire these actors.
Okay.
And so Charlie Day, who is Luigi, is the only one talking the whole film, because I think his rate is lower.
But
Luigi,
that guy at the
Luigi
beginning
carries
wasn't,
the film. I know.
He wasn't a famous
I
actor.
I think there weren't enough dialogue moments in this because it's Pedro Pascal is just calling in from Zoom to film his lines and he's really expensive. And it's Sigourney Weaver, so I don't know. Maybe if you had cast people who had who were less expensive.
And Martin, don't forget Martin Scorsese. They blew half the budget.
I feel like he just did that for fun.
Yeah, I think he probably did.
He did that for love of the game.
The thing about Pedro Pascal is I think he really is a wonderful actor, which means you can tell when he phones it in.
Yeah.
I remember we watched Gladiator 2 a year or two ago, and he's in that movie and phoning it in. But then you watch another show or movie with him and it's this guy's great. So you can tell when he is not actively a participant in the movie, and that just it felt like he's been acting more in the press for the movie than he did
for the film.
Statement that is. Do we think that Grogu was well used? Because he's half the reason people are coming to this movie. Did he get enough character development, screen time, personality, or was he just
a
toy?
Alex
is here.
Grace is here.
Grace is significant
he
other.
Has a strong
Alex
opinion
is here.
About Grogu.
Lean in and tell us what you think of Grogu.
He was there a lot. He was used.
He was there a lot.
Liked, but you said character development, and I made a face like that was a joke. What about? I mean, I guess he saved his dad. And that's character development to save your dad? Sure.
Sure.
That was about it.
And that was, again, I think the only sequence that I was like, this is good. I like what I'm seeing. Where I wasn't there's some good things in here. It was no, this is genuinely a good scene from a movie. This deserves to be in a movie because it has heart.
Yeah.
It has a little bit of stakes with Grogu stealing the fish and some humor when he's pushing him into the little cave and he keeps bonking his head. That's funny.
Actual practical effects.
Exactly.
There's memes.
Yeah.
I heard, did Jon Favreau say we didn't leave California to film this? I'm pretty sure
did he say that?
He did say that. I feel like the flora and fauna in that scene is it's from California and they're in some kind of forest near wherever they were filming.
Interesting.
Alex, what were your takeaways since you're here?
You guys talked about that Grogu scene in the swamp being the best, and I think for me the actual best part of that was Grogu's interaction with the swamp lizard guy. Those interactions for some reason hit very well, even though not much dialogue was interchanged. They're just those interactions felt more real, whereas even some of the humans, it was just you're reading a line. I'm glad you got a paycheck for reading a line in a Star Wars movie, but that was weirdly... that one connected for me.
Yeah. It's because he cares for Grogu. It's like there's basic human empathy from this lizard swamp guy. Also, the wooden rocking chair, like his like setup. It felt like a human being would live there.
Yeah, exactly. Like he was a lived-in little swamp hut, and that guy was like part of that world. He knows who the huts are. He knows the order of things there. And he sees this weird little cute baby, and he's like, "You stealing my fish? All right."
Yeah, it had heart because, again, there were the people in the scene cared about each other and about other things that were off-screen, and you can't say that for most of the rest of the movie.
Right, yeah. I mean, you know, I think because my expectations were so low going in that there were points where I was like, oh, this is fine. As if that were...
This is fine, meaning, like, I won't walk out of the theater. I'll continue to sit here.
I'm going, oh, this is, you know, not... awful.
Right.
Like, it's all right.
Yeah. So would you see it again?
Yeah.
No.
No. like, would I see it again if someone paid me? I would, like, what?
That's not
what
how movies
money?
Work, though. You pay them, actually.
Even if someone paid me, I would not.
Well, it depends on how much they pay you. Like, if someone gave you $100.
If it was $1,000.
Wait, okay, so $100, would you go see it again?
Yeah.
$100, Haley?
I would not. You're turning down
$100.
I'm turning down $100. Okay. I would rather do other things with my time.
Would you rather make that sandwich, the flatbread, bread, or whatever?
Okay, if they gave me the sandwich, I would eat it for $100.
But it would have to be $100?
It would have to be $100. But to see the film again, like at least $1,000.
$1,000.
That's a lot of money.
My time is precious these days.
You know, that's fair. Haley's the one with kids. Like, she has a beautiful family.
But that $100 could buy them so much food, though.
I can make $100 by working.
Which could That's be true. More enjoyable.
It would be more enjoyable
than watching The Mandalorian and Grogu.
Yeah,
which was, you know, a movie. It was a movie that we saw.
I mean, the 10 minutes of Christian allegory, I will enjoy.
I forgot about the most important part of the movie.
I will cherish that and bring it with me. Even the broiled fish that Grogu eats also has resonance in that part of the Bible.
Wow. That's so true.
Alex is nodding along whenever
you're,
I'm talking.
Honestly, you're so right about that. You laid out a strong case.
Is there something in the Bible that says Jesus doesn't take his helmet off?
No, there's not. But there is something where if you look upon God's face as a human being, he's far too like magnificent and you will die.
And on that note...
And the Mandalorian does say, you saw my face and you will die.
You will die. So Mandalorian is God and Jesus.
God and Jesus.
And with that, we're going to wrap up our episode about The Mandalorian and Grogu. Thank you so much for listening. If you want to share your thoughts about this episode, maybe about the movie itself, or if you want to suggest topics for future shows, you can email us at hothtakes@gmail.com, or you can reach out to us on X and Blue Sky. We've got links to our social media profiles in the show notes. Haley made our wonderful logo and banner art, and I edited the show and put together our music. Although, for legal purposes, we should note that all Star Wars music and sound effects are the intellectual property of Lucasfilm. You can find a complete archive of past episodes on our website, hothtakes.wordpress.com. And if you like the show, please share it with a friend. You can find Hoth Takes on all the major podcasting platforms, including Apple Podcasts, Amazon Music, and Spotify. We'll see you next time. May the Force be with you.